Well, we have a guest joining us here this morning. Sean Schaus is in with us. He's an Iowa State University ag engineer, among his other duties and titles. Sean, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Well, I saw a story earlier this week. You were participating in a video conference that had to do with a lot of folks around the Missouri River Basin. We all know what happened here this last growing season, the spring, the summer months, and in some cases still going on throughout that area with all the flooding, the tremendous snowfall, and then the runoff associated with that into that Missouri River Basin, causing incredible flooding in some areas this year. And in a lot of cases, we've talked about a lot of different aspects of it, from the housing to the roads and bridges and those kinds of things, the stuff that happens to people. You know, I don't think too many folks thought a lot about, you know, what happens to the farmland after it's flooded for a long period of time, and it's not necessarily a good story.
No, that's right, and that was the focus of this series of events, was to help the farmers start to plan for what they need to do. As you say, we have seen houses and businesses flooded, and we know what happens to roads when they're flooded, but the farm ground is kind of the last thing most people think about, and there are some things, a lot of cleanup that's going to be necessary, and some adjustments that these producers are going to have to make before they can get that ground back in production.
Now, a lot of us are familiar with flooding. A lot of us have seen it and experienced it, but not like this. We're not talking about your garden variety flood where the waters come up for a day or two and then they're gone. This is long, extended, prolonged periods of time, months, with this flood water moving through farm areas that's not used to that kind of thing. It does a lot of damage.
That's right. It can. Because it was there so long, it starts to affect the soil itself underneath. There's more than just the erosion and the trash left behind. There are some biological changes happening in those soils when they're submerged for extended periods of time like that.
And most of us would look at it, and that's what we would think on the surface. We wouldn't think about anything else. We'd think about the debris. In some cases, the trash, you know, stuff like that that's left behind. We don't think about what happens when the soil and the ground starts to move like that.
Yeah, and they've actually got a label for that. They call it flooded soil syndrome, from the changes that happen in flooded soils that are submerged for extended periods of time.
You know, you think with farmland like that, most of us that aren't involved in that industry directly, we would probably think, well, you know, you show up again, if everything's fine, you just jump back out there, you get the ground ready again, next spring you're planting again. Not that easy.
No, in short-term floods, it might be that way. Pick up the trash, a little light tillage, and you're ready to run again. But with these, some of this ground may take a year or two before it's back in usable form. And of course, they're going to be local spots where the erosion was so severe that, or the sandbars are so deep that it may not ever be put back into ag production. There may be areas that are just abandoned, used as a stockpile for sand, or treated as a wetland now after the erosion.
You know, it's kind of hard to believe, Sean, because I think we all know a few producers out there who firmly believe that they could farm just about any piece of land.
Yeah. That's right. And there, some of them are very good at adapting to special situations like that. But we may have some holes out there. We've seen some early photographs now from some ground that is back out from under the water. Producer over by toward Takema, Nebraska, river bottom land on the other side of the river. And he had some spots in his field where the erosion scours were as much as 10 to 15 feet deep. That's a deep enough hole, you're probably not going to pay the money to try to do enough earthwork to fill that back in. I suspect he's just going to have to farm differently around that hole at this point.
Well, with the scope of the flooding, and it was wide, I assume we're talking about a lot of acres here.
Yes, FSA office does not have an official estimate out. They have not finished their assessments of the official acreage. We heard earlier some folks making estimates of 150,000 to maybe 200,000 acres in Iowa. I spoke with a representative from Congressman King's office, and he said, well, that's kind of the number they've been using, is probably no more than 200,000 acres, but that's a sizable amount of crop ground to need a lot of repair work and try to get it ready to go again.
Well, with corn and beans at the prices they are, yeah, that's a lot of profit that disappears too. It's a lot of profit potential out there that's gone. Talk a little bit about what some of the dangers are. You mentioned things like the soil erosion, sand that can be swept in and left behind. Are those basically the things we're looking at? Is there more to it?
There's a little bit more. Before people actually get out there and start, they need to think about the fact that erosion may have removed soil over top of some underground utilities. So the first thing to do before you start doing any kind of tillage or earthwork out there is to call Iowa One Call and make sure that the underground utilities are marked so you aren't getting into more than you bargained for.
Right.
And then there may be some hazardous stuff that's floated into the site too. So as you do your initial assessment, what I would advise producers to do, take a map of some kind, whether that's an aerial photo of your farm, a soils map, whatever you want to use, and just start walking around the areas you can get to and start drawing a map, show the sand here is this deep, the sand over there is deeper, the big trees are located here, there's a propane tank that floated in here. Some of those hazardous items like fuel tanks and unmarked canisters that may have hazardous materials in them, we need to be cautious about how those are handled, keep them stored separately. The DNR and the EPA have promised that they would help farmers dispose of those hazardous materials, especially things like propane tanks. They've got a phone number they'd like people to call and let EPA get involved before you try to move propane tanks.
It's not just going out with a trash bag and picking up stuff, is it?
No, some of it's going to be considerably bigger than that.
Yeah. What about trees? Is there a problem with trees that have been submerged for such a long time? If the root systems are weakened, could some of those come toppling over and things too?
It's possible if there was erosion around the roots or if the soil is still saturated around them that it will be much weaker than it would have been otherwise. And some of the trees won't survive being submerged that long. Most of the trees on the river bottom are probably adapted to that type of situation, especially on the other side of the levee next to the river. The trees that survive there are accustomed to frequent flooding. But when we get to these areas that have been protected by a levee for years and years, we may not have the same kind of situation there. This is ground that doesn't normally flood. So there may be some different situations on our side of the levee.
Are we talking about, I assume there's quite a bit of time, but are we talking about considerable cost then as well, just to make this land usable again?
Oh, sure. If you have to start doing considerable amounts of earth moving, moving sand around and things like that, that can get expensive. You can easily start running into $2,000, $3,000 per acre trying to reclaim land that has heavy deposits of sand and silt. And the experts advise, you know, you think about those things before you start hiring contractors and moving sand. Start to estimate your costs and consider, is this going to be worthwhile to move this much sand, or are there small spots in the field I want to just abandon, farm around, make a stockpile there, a windrow of sand, and not try to spread that all back out. Thin layers you can probably spread out and till back into the soil. If you've got good soil underneath, a little bit of sand mixed in will be okay on those sandy or those silty clay loams. If you've got really sandy soils, then you probably don't want to add any more sand to it.
Well, it's going to be awful tough for some producers to take a look at. I've heard it said before that many of us might look at a piece of land and wonder how we can scape it the way we want to make it like a homestead, and farmers look at it to think, how can I get those trees out of here and move this around so I can farm as much as I possibly can? It would be tough for somebody to have to make that decision to abandon certain areas, or maybe, as you say, use some area kind of as a dumping ground to move things out of the way so you can use a different piece of land.
Right, especially when this is their livelihood, is using this ground. It's hard to give up any square inch that could have been helping with your livelihood, but it may just be the economical choice in a few cases. And people can get some assistance. FSA people want to be out there and help with those assessments. NRCS folks have advised people that, especially in fields that may have had wetlands in them, farmed wetlands or designated wetlands, make sure you talk to the NRCS folks before you start moving sand around. You don't want to go out there and push some sand into a location that's going to come back and cause problems for you later because it was a wetland before. So there are some folks who should be consulted and will try to help make those assessments early on.
Are the problems mostly temporary if they're taken care of, or are there some issues that might come up that might be basically permanent where that land just can never be used again?
The biological side of things, the flooded soil syndrome, should correct itself in time. Those bacteria in the soil that have really reduced their populations because there were no roots there to grow on will come back as soon as there are roots in the soil again. So getting some kind of vegetation going on that ground again will really help. And within a year or two, that population of bacteria in the soil should be back to normal again. We don't have to add any more. They'll come back all on their own. So some of those things will correct themselves. Now, if you've got really deep layers of sand that you can't get out of the way, that's going to be a long-lasting effect. Or if you've got deep erosion that you can't fill back in with economical earth moving or tillage, that may change the way you farm that piece of ground.
Is any of that land even eligible for like a CRP program or something along those lines?
Yes, there may be programs that would be appropriate for some of those changed spaces like that, and that would be well worth looking into.
So when we deal with all these kinds of things, we're looking at a lot of issues that that have to be dealt with here. We're basically corn and bean farmers for the most part in Iowa. Are there other types of crops that might be a little bit easier to produce on land like that sooner?
Yeah, there may be some other crops that are better suited to those bottom ground areas, but the economics that we're working with these days make it awful hard to compete with corn and soybeans if you can grow them on the ground. And some producers may decide that soybeans would be a good choice this first year coming out of the flooding because they are less susceptible to some of the flooded soil syndrome effects, the phosphorus uptake effects that we would see with corn. So you may be more inclined to go back with soybeans on the ground where you can get it reclaimed for this first growing season. If there are areas that are badly damaged, then you may think maybe this is a good spot to think about one of those reserve programs where I can set that side off and use permanent seeding on it and let that take over some areas.
Then if they could get a crop next year, then all they have to worry about from that point on is actually finding a road to get it to market, huh?
Yeah, that's right. There's going to be a lot of that work to do, too. And there are, frankly, some questions, some fields where if the levee doesn't get repaired this year, may not be a good idea to plant on it if you know the likelihood of flooding is extremely high if the levee can't get repaired. So in some cases, folks are just going to have to wait until they see a plan from the Corps on how quickly some of those levee repairs can be done.
Sounds like a lot of issues to deal with.
It is a lot for those producers to think about. They may not be spending as much time on the combine this fall, but they have plenty to think about.
Absolutely. Sean, thanks for coming in.
Hey, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.